able to understand whether it's adapt in an adaptive way throughout the day, understand when someone's feeling overloaded or overly fatigued, and being able to adapt their work environment to that, whether it be through adapting it in real time, because we understand and can predict when someone's going to reach a problematic state, or even just after action review, and looking at a day in the life of an employee and saying, okay, this is when, this person or this segment of people tend to get in a problematic state. Let's do something about it, and let's recognize that improvement in productivity.
Adam Gross, you're a pioneer in the field of visual neuroscience and human performance. As such, you're the CEO and co-founder of Harmonize and RightEye, where you work at the intersection of vision, brain performance, and leadership. You're helping individuals and organizations improve focus, decision-making, and sustainable performance. For those who don't know your work, what problem are you ultimately trying to solve?
First of all, it's nice to meet you, Alan, and thank you for the opportunity to join the podcast. Looking
Likewise.
forward to our conversation. So ultimately, when I started the company back in 2012 with my co-founder, Dr. Melissa Humphovey, when we met, she had a background in eye tracking research and eye tracking product development. I really didn't know what eye tracking was, even as a technology, and I come from a background of business building, so more entrepreneur type than scientist or even technologist. But it was very intuitive that there were decades of research that correlate your eye movement behavior to different aspects of your health, your vision, your performance, even your attention and emotion. And at the time, so that kind of resonated with me. Yeah, you could the eyes we always heard were the windows to the soul, and ultimately 80% of what the brain processes is what it takes in through the eyes, right? So it's the most powerful sense, vision. But there was never really a tool that was useful in kind of understanding that connection between the eyes and the brain, at least one that was kind of broad-based and easily accessible. And so when we started the company, it was really about how do we take eye tracking, which is the technology, the mostly camera-based technology that tracks eye movement behavior, how do we take that, combine that with the research that existed for decades, and understand the person, and how do we take that, create a product around it, very practical, very accessible, and kind of take it out of the lab and bring it into the world? And so the problem, if you will, at the core was when we started the company, and our mission was to leverage eye tracking and impact as many people in the world as possible in a positive way. So there were a number of challenges that at the time that we were faced with. Number one, the eye tracking technology was extremely expensive. It was large and bulky, and not as accessible, right? And so that's number one. Number two, most of the products had been limited to kind of market research and accessibility in terms of disabled people. And there weren't a lot of kind of broader based eye tracking products out there. And so but we looked at this, and you look at the measure of eye movement behavior, there are a number of wonderful qualities about it. Number one, it's objective. You can't fake how your eyes move. Number two, it's quantifiable. We can actually break it down and quantify the data based off of eye movement behavior. And also you can be monitored in a passive way, and it's non-invasive, right? And so you have the opportunity, you don't have to put on a headset or invasive hardware. It can be done through the webcam that we're, for example, that we're both using right now. And so I know that's a long-winded answer, but for your simple question of what's the problem that we're solving, but I think it was I think it's important to kind of give a background on eye tracking itself and the potential and the capability and the friction that had been existed that existed for so long, and how we're solving a lot of that, making it more accessible, developing eye tracking models and products that can help people's lives, whether it's performance, education, training, which and HR related tasks, which we'll talk about today. And so it really was about kind of eliminating the friction for a technology in and of itself. And since then, we've been kind of leading the field in that regard.
Okay, good stuff. And what is it about the movement of the eye that, what does it tell you? Tell me about that relationship in terms of the performance of the movement of the eye.
Yeah, so most people, when they think of eye tracking and they think of vision, most people think of eyes out, the concept of eyes out. Where am I looking, right? Where am I looking in relation to a task that I'm supposed to be performing? Am I looking at the right place at the right time? Am I identifying the visual cues that are appropriate to perform my task so I don't miss anything, so that I can process? Am I looking at them? Am I looking at those specific areas for a long enough period of time where my brain can process it, and I can make good decisions? So that's what a concept that we call visual search. Eyes out, right? What a lot of people don't understand is that there's so much potential for eye tracking when you build algorithms and models that are eyes in. And so there are ocular signatures and patterns. If you use AI, you use machine learning, and you have a large data set to train from, eyes in is a whole nother concept where we can tell so much about a human being based off of just how their eyes are moving. So these are relational eye movements, more visual, think visual patterns that are not specific to a stimuli or a target that I'm supposed to be looking at out in the field, in my field of view. And so I would say that's really our differentiator. It's using science, it's using data, it's using machine learning and AI to develop models that identify and develop accurate sense of your ocular signatures, right? Ocular signatures and patterns can be tied to a host of things. Today, we'll talk about things like cognitive load and mental fatigue and drowsiness, right? But they also can, their ocular signatures, if you have Parkinson's disease or Lyme disease or traumatic brain injury, a concussion, if you will. And so in our last 12 years, we've deployed thousands of devices that have been testing devices, assessment devices around the world, to eye doctors, to neurologists, hospital systems, military customers, sports, elite sports teams, where we've got now 15 million unique records in our validated and labeled database around eye movements. And we've bucketed those into 130 of different data sets. One of those data sets is, situational awareness, right? What's the signature for something like that? What's the signature for something like depression or stress? And so then we can, if once we have that data, which we're in a unique position to have it, then we can train models on that data. We can identify those ocular signatures, right? And then we can model and tune and retune those, and we can deliver those on any eye tracking camera-based device.
Now, forgive me asking a stupid question. What is an ocular signature? Tell me about that.
It's really how your eyes move. And so there are, to break it down a little bit more, there are functional eye movements that we all do every second of every day. You can think about those functional eye movements in terms of blinks. That's a functional eye movement. How your pupils respond, pupil metrics, even things like fixations, right? Can you fixate on a target? Saccadic eye movements, which are kind of rapid jumps from target to target to target. Many of those saccades and these movements are involuntary, right? And so it's a challenge to, number one, extract those features from a camera-based device early in the eye tracking pipeline, but then you've got to identify which of those features are meaningful and contribute to a model that you can use to deploy in the world to identify what does mental fatigue look like at any given time? What does cognitive load look like? And which is the level of mental effort that you're giving towards a task, right? Understanding the brain. So the ocular signatures are breaking it down, those specific eye movements, fixations, saccades, things like that. And then but we're talking about a large amount of data. I'm talking about anywhere from 30 to 130 times per second per eye, right? And so when you combine all of that, you collect all that data, there are ocular patterns and signatures that are very relevant, that you start to see patterns over and over again, and those are the signatures.
Okay, and what, for, if correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like this is a diagnostic tool. Is that right?
So there we have had a medical device over the last 10 years that we've sold into, and it's kind of a tablet-based device that we've sold into, like I mentioned, the healthcare community and elite performance community. That really was, and that's a right eye product that we continue to sell today. And that's where we've procured most of our data. That we're now able to train models on. A couple things happened about 2 years ago that is the reason why we created this new division called Harmonize. Number one is, I mentioned before that eye tracking technology, the sensor technology, we don't make it, but it's mostly camera based. And so in the past, we've had the requirement to purchase a camera based device and put our software on it, get it FDA cleared. All of that. Going forward, due to a lot of factors, technologies, better, faster, cheaper, Moore's Law, cameras on kind of regular consumer devices have become so sophisticated that we can extract an eye tracking signal from it. And so what that means is, we kind of saw this coming a couple of years ago, is that we said, wait a second, we'll be able to deploy our eye tracking models on, billions of devices that already exist, without the requirement to buy new hardware, versus, tens of thousands of, devices that we have to source, validate, procure, and ship out, which is a more difficult business. So we kind of saw this coming. We created this new division called Harmonize. And at the same time, obviously we're all aware that, AI and advanced machine learning became more mainstream, more people developed these skills. And so the talent pool to do what we were doing became more available. And so we looked at that, we saw a big opportunity to lead in the space of, let's create some, rather than creating assessment and medical device type of products, let's create some AI models that can help understand a person at any given time in a continuous fashion, and can be delivered on devices that people already have. And so that's why we created Harmonize, and we're deploying that primarily in the enterprise. And so that's been kind of a we're kind of an we're it's a new age for us.
Adam, that being said, what is your ultimate outcome? What are you trying to actually achieve with the technology? When you've got someone, you put them through it, you use the technology, and you say, right, there we are. Now you can see X, Y, and Z.
So there are a number of use cases. So maybe what we can do is talk about some of the models that we've developed. It's a good segue. So a few of the models that we've developed are, I mentioned before, cognitive load, which may not be familiar with a lot of people, but they're familiar with the feeling, right? So cognitive load is the level of mental effort that you're giving to a task at any given time. And if you think of cognitive load like a bell curve, if you have low load, that means you're typically pretty bored, you're not paying attention, you're not really engaged. If you're being asked to perform a task, any sort of work task or performance task, typically your results will be poor if you're not engaged, if you're bored, right? If you eat and equally, if you're overloaded, right? We've all felt that feeling of I just, I can't process anything else that can come at me right now. Whether I'm driving a vehicle and it's raining and the kids are screaming in the back seat, we've all felt that, right? If something happens, I'm more likely to get in an accident because I'm overloaded. But you can think of a lot of enterprise use cases and training use cases as well. Reaction times are slower if something unexpected happens. And decisions are poor, and outcomes are worse. So the optimal place to be is kind of in that middle layer, which is a moderate level of cognitive load. It really means that you're engaged, you're attentive, you're aware of what's going on, and you've got more bandwidth to deal with something that unexpected that might come in. Another model is mental fatigue, right? Another solution. And that's really kind of more of a preparedness metric, which is, how much do I have in the tank when I begin a task, right? And if I'm getting kind of measured at various parts of the day, am I ready to perform my task at a high level? And that has a direct correlation to cognitive load, because if I've got a low bank at the beginning of the day, because I was out most of the night last night drinking with my buddies, and I didn't get a lot of sleep, but I had an important task in the morning, I may not, even start at my best, and therefore I might reach a kind of an overload situation, even faster than I normally would, and so. The mental fatigue is a direct correlation to burnout. And so we see, opportunities there in the enterprise, in terms of kind of understanding when folks are just feeling burnt out, and anticipating that. So we've developed these models to perform in any environment, whether I'm behind a webcam, whether I'm conducting training in the workplace through smart glasses or a head-mounted display, even if I'm driving a vehicle or flying an aircraft. The wonderful thing about this is that it can be done continuously, passively, and it can add a lot to both on the training side, being able to kind of understand when someone's training for position and the task, understand how they're feeling and tie that to specific tasks or specific events throughout a task, understanding the root cause analysis, right, of where are things breaking down so I can train to that. So if so it's for the trainee, but it's also for the trainer. It helps them. And ultimately what it does is it speeds up that training process, which enterprises really, really love. And then kind of on a longer term basis and throughout your regular part of the day, being able to understand whether it's adapt in an adaptive way throughout the day, understand when someone's feeling overloaded, or overly fatigued, and being able to adapt their work environment to that, whether it be through adapting it in real time, because we understand it can predict when someone's going to reach a problematic state, or even just after action review, and looking at a day in the life of an employee and saying, okay, this is when, this person or this segment of people tend to get in a problematic state. Let's do something about it, and let's recognize that improvement in productivity. And then, of course, burnout is, like I mentioned before, we all know is a big issue. And so if we can improve on that. So it's about delivering this in the workforce throughout the day, and it's also about delivering it in a training environment to help accelerate the timing of training, which saves companies money, and also improve giving the trainer the ability to kind of do that root cause analysis and train better and faster.
Could it make decision making better? Is it, could it improve decision making, leadership, etc.?
Yeah, so one of the aspects of our models is that it's not they don't just identify the current state of that person. We actually build in the capability to we predict when that person's going to reach a problematic state. So the idea there is that if you know ahead of time that someone is going to reach a problematic state, then you can pre-program certain interventions and corrective actions. And in that case, you can prevent problems from happening, whether it's a behavioral health safety risk, right? We're working with NASA right now with astronauts to understand, that those are catastrophic, potential in terms of outcomes and performance mistakes. And so being able to understand in real time, and basically adapt and respond before they become things become a problem, is important on a day-to-day basis. Maybe it's a trading a trader, a Wall Street trader making a $10 million trade, right? And if they're not in the best position to do that, or we can anticipate that they're not going to be in 30 seconds in the best position to do that, then maybe you can, from a leadership perspective, you can include a human in the loop, right? You can intervene, you can pre-program automatic interventions as well.
Got you. Got you. Okay. As we're going to have to start wrapping up now, and it's been great chatting to you. I just want to throw a couple of quick rapid fire questions at you to get your quick comments. What excites you most about the intersection of neuroscience, technology, and leadership?
For us, I think it's about empowerment. I think being able to provide leadership the tools to understand both recruiting candidates better before they make a hire, and where those strengths and weaknesses are in an objective way, and then also deliver greater performance outcomes to the team. On a, once those candidates have been brought on, and ultimately improving outcomes, and it's basically just giving them the capabilities that didn't exist before in an objective, quantifiable way. And it's less about, this is how I'm feeling. It's more about we know how you're feeling because
Okay.
we have the objective data.
Gotcha, gotcha. And what's one belief about performance that you think we really need to unlearn?
That's a good question that we need to unlearn. I think I'm going to go back to the objectivity. I think when we do after action reviews, when we look at, responses to poor decision making, poor outcomes, I think that we can get more granular. And we can get to the objective information and not rely on the subjectivity.
Okay. And if you could leave leaders with one practical insight to improve how they think, how they see, and they decide, what would that be?
I would say having tools such as eye tracking that can allow them to see, see better. And see in a passive way that's not encroaching on a person's privacy. I would say these types of tools that are out there that are coming online, I think can change the game. And I think it's about empowering leadership to have more information that is practical, easy to deploy, useful, private, that can allow them to adapt and react in real time. It's intelligence that just hasn't really existed before in many ways. And so I think I think it's going to be a new age in leadership in enterprise. And so we're excited to play a role in that.
Okay. My last point. I always do this at the end of my chats. I've learned that experts have something on their heart that they feel they need to say. What is it that you need to say that we haven't spoken about?
That's a good question too. I would say that yeah, I think my point is that when in our case I mentioned that we kind of backed into a market where the sensor technology that we're so passionate about almost overnight became ubiquitous. And I tell young people this all the time that I talk to young aspiring business people. You can fall into a kind of fortunate, lucky situation where, say, your total addressable market just kind of explodes overnight because of technology, nothing that you did. And that's kind of where we found ourselves a couple of years ago. But I think it's about what you do with it and are you prepared? And so in our case, we had procured so much data the right way. We didn't even know how we were going to use it, but we knew that data was rich and we knew the data was going to be useful at some point in the future. So it's about when those opportunities come about, it's about being ready and being prepared to take advantage of them. And so that's kind of where we are right now. And I'd end with that.
Okey-dokes. Adam Gross, you're doing something very special and quite unique. And I wish you much success and fulfillment in your work. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your wisdom with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Alan. It was a pleasure.